Good evening, colleagues. I'd like to call to order and open the public hearing on the Joint Interim Committee on Student Success. Thank you, people of Redmond and the Greater Bend Metropolitan Area, for welcoming us here for the last 2 days. My name is Barbara Smith Warner. I'm the House Co-Chair of the Joint Committee on Student Success. And welcome to the public hearing part of our day's agenda. We, as I said, we're at the end of our second day on the Central Oregon part of this tour. We have had a number of roundtables on school safety with education stakeholders. We've had some student listening sessions, done a number of tours to different schools in the Central Oregon area, as well as had meetings of our work group here. So we've had quite a productive couple of days. Tomorrow morning, we will be zipping up to Hood River for a few more meetings in Hood River as well to close out this, I think it's our eighth trip of the Joint Committee on Student Success. So this evening, I would like to have all of the committee members who are here introduce themselves, and then we will call forward all the folks who are interested in providing public testimony to the committee. We will be welcomed by City Councilor John Bullock, who can come up anytime he would like and sit at the table while we work through this. But just to be clear, this is a joint committee that we are traveling around the state, kind of meeting with and educators, students, parents, community members, to really get a sense of how our education system is working in this state and how can we share good ideas between communities and maximize the opportunities for our every one of our students to find success. So we are going to be putting together a package probably for the by the end of this year for the next legislative session, at which we will continue to work on it. And all of the information and visits that we do on these tours will inform that work. So with that, I am gonna take the chair's prerogative and have the House members introduce themselves first. So again, my name is Barbara Smith Warner. I represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park and Park Rose, if that means anything to anybody who's been in Portland. And I have two kids in public schools, an eighth grader and a 10th grader.
Is this taped? It's me.
I believe, oh, thank you. This is a tape. This meeting is taped. I'm going to come back and do all the the details. But
hello, everybody. I'm Diego Hernandez. I represent East Portland, House District 47. I also serve on the Reynolds School Board.
Hello, I'm Julie Fahey. I'm the state representative for West Eugene, Junction City, and parts of rural Lane County.
Go ahead, Mr. Co-Chair.
Okay, I just want to make sure
I am Arnie Roblin, Senator from District 5. My district starts at the Charleston Bridge just south of Coos Bay, Oregon, and goes to the entire west side of Tillamook Bay. So if you were on I-5, you'd be just above Portland and just below Roseburg. So it's a long district, and it has all of the coastal mountains in it as well. So great to be here. I'm one of the co-chairs of this subcommittee and the chair of education in the Senate.
Senator Tim Canope, representing Redmond, Bend, Tumalo, and Sun River, and want to welcome my colleagues to my district and to Central Oregon.
Alan DeBoer, Senate District 3, which is Medford, Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, Jacksonville, and the Applegate Valley.
Hello, I'm Lou Frederick. I'm Senate District 22. That's North and Northeast Portland, basically Lloyd Center, all of the airport, and all of North Portland.
All right, thank you. So thank you for that reminder, Arnie. This is a public hearing and is being recorded for posterity. You can also access it on the Oregon Legislative Information System, which you can find online. We are limited to 2 hours, which I think we should be okay. And we are limiting speakers to 2 minutes, even though we have we probably have enough to give more people time. We try to be consistent across all of the hearings that we've had across the state. So I will call three folks in a row who can come up and be seated and start their testimony. We have some processes for having people on deck. I'm going to worry a little bit less about that this time. But first, I would like to thank City Councilor John Bullock for joining us to welcome us to Redmond today.
Thank you so much. Representative Smith Warner and Senator Roblin and the committee, thank you so much for coming to Redmond. We really appreciate the opportunity to share with you our great city and the many wonderful things happening in education here. In my role as a city councilor, I'm here to tell you thanks and welcome you on behalf of the mayor and our entire city council. There are many great things happening in the Redmond education system for our young people. You're sitting in one of those. Our most recent school bond passed that built this beautiful facility that we're in tonight. As you may be aware, the Redmond School District is currently pursuing a second bond to do some maintenance and build a new school as well. And so we're encouraged by the support that the people of Redmond have for their school system. And we hope that in your tours today that you were able to see some of that and see not only some successes, but perhaps hear about some challenges. We're excited tonight, as I see out in the audience, there are a number of people from the education community here, as well as some parents and community members who I think will share with you some of those successes, but also hopefully talk about some of the challenges that we face to try and provide our students with the best education possible. In my other role is the executive director of the Redmond Proficiency Academy. I appreciate those of you that came to visit today, and hopefully you got to see and hear about the things that happened there. I'm actually going to duck out early tonight because I have to head down to Senator DeBoer's district down in Ashland. I have a board meeting at the university, so I'm going to sneak away here in a second if that's okay. But before I do, I just want to tell you that what I know about Redmond is that the people that are here because they love our kids and they love what happens in this community, and they're deeply supportive of education. I also know that they're going to ask you to try and find a way to help bridge the gap between the expectations that we have for education and the funding that goes with those expectations. And I hope that as they do, you'll learn more about our great community and about our desire to help our children. So thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you again for having us. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and call up the first three speakers. And just to be clear, if you do not get a chance to speak, or if for any reason you decide later you'd like to submit some testimony, you can send an email to jcss.exhibits, plural, at oregonlegislature.gov. You can do that before 9 p.m. tomorrow. That's when the comments section will close your opportunity to add to the public record for tonight's hearing. So again, that's JCSS for Joint Committee on Student Success dot exhibits, plural, at oregonlegislature.gov before 9 o'clock tomorrow night. Okay, I'd like to ask Colin Robinson, Sandy Cloud, and Sharon Belusky to come forward. And you can arrange yourself in any way you'd care to.
Good evening. My name is Colin Robinson. I'm the immediate past president for the Oregon PTA. I've had a lot of interactions with a lot of you on this panel. Thank you so much for being here. Currently, I am the family engagement chair for Oregon PTA. I also sit on the national board for PTA. Locally, I have two kids, a senior at Mountain View High School, and my son is an eighth grader at Realms. And I'm also a middle school cross-country coach, soccer coach. I've spent most of my adult career ensuring that every child reaches their full potential. And I hope that's what you are seeking to do from this panel. There's a lot of good things about education in Oregon. And I see it in my work with Oregon PTA. And I know it's out there. But consistently, we've asked teachers and administrators to do more with less year after year. And that's probably the thing that has to change. When my daughter was in high school, And she goes into her first class of the first day, and there are not enough seats. Those things happen. And sure, it gets worked out, and kids get moved around, and eventually everyone has a seat. But these aren't stories that I just hear from my daughter. These are stories that I hear from families in Portland, in Florence, in Ashland, across the state. The classrooms are too crowded. We know that. My son is a fifth grader, had some struggles, not being seen in a classroom. The teachers are doing everything they can, and they just don't have the time to work through 30 plus kids in a fifth grade classroom. That's not why they started their careers in education, was to do crowd control. They got into education to have a real impact. And it's time the state stepped up and fully funded education in this state, particularly through the quality education model, which you are constitutionally mandated to do, but it's never happened. And so I hope the package that comes out from this committee makes that happen, because that's how we will see the results in this state that we all expect. Thank you.
Thank you. And as a former PTA board member, thank you for your service to the PTA.
Hello, and thank you for being here. My name is Sandy Cloud, and I'm speaking on behalf of charter schools, specifically Redmond Proficiency Academy. I was a single mother and a full-time college student on a limited income, homeschooling my two daughters in the spring of 2009 when I heard about a new charter school forming. I homeschooled because I believe that children are born to love learning, and that somewhere along their system as they age, that joy is lost, and that was not okay with me. When I explored RPA, I found a school that expects every student to graduate and will do everything they can to ensure that that happens, that believes in, respects, and supports every student, whatever their skill level, that insists on an inclusive environment so that every student is safe to be themselves, and in turn takes the risk of letting their creativity and their curiosity play a little bit, and has a staff empowered to do all they can to ensure student success. So we made it work. We drove 50 plus miles a day while not always knowing how to pay for the fuel to get there. I and hundreds of other families love that at RPA, students are placed according to skill level, not grade level. I love our college model, where students practice real life skills like managing their workload, schedules, and free time. I always said that I wanted my daughters to make mistakes while they were home with me, so that we could learn from them together instead of them going to college and paying $25,000 a year for the privilege. That was easy to say until it happened. But in her mistakes, my oldest daughter found out what really mattered to her. She found out that she wanted to perform well. She wanted to have good relationships with her teachers and her peers, and that her future really mattered to her. She was in the inaugural freshman class at RPA and was invited to be in the inaugural freshman class at Southern Oregon University Honors College. My youngest was accepted to Smith College. The opportunity that school choice in Oregon gave us through Redmond Proficiency Academy changed our lives and has changed the lives of countless other parents. And I just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sharon, and I'm the parent of two kids at Ben Lapine Schools. My daughter is in sixth grade, and she has dyslexia. There are a lot of issues to consider when talking about student success. But from the viewpoint of a parent, the one thing I never considered is that my daughter would get to fourth grade and would still be reading at a first grade level. Sure, she memorized words, she learned how to appear to be reading, but she couldn't really read. I think we can all agree that a child who can barely read has a limited potential of truly being successful in school. Consider what it feels like for a bright, happy, eager child to enter kindergarten and spend the next 5 years failing to learn to read at the level of her peers. Kids can feel the impact of this repeated failure intensely. They are at risk for many things, including not graduating from high school. My daughter thought she had failed, but really, we failed her. From kindergarten through fourth grade, my daughter received interventions and all the extra help that a Title I school provides. We were encouraged to think that if we just kept reading with her, she would eventually pick it up. She did not. The teachers at my child's school care about their kids. They were doing everything they knew to do, but the methods used to teach her to read were not effective. We now have one teacher with some dyslexia training in each K through 5 school. That's a great start, but with 10 to 20% of kids having symptoms of dyslexia, that's not enough. That model is called a bottleneck. Teachers in Central and Eastern Oregon have very limited access to dyslexia classes and resources. We need that to change so that we can have more educators trained to teach struggling readers across the state. The root issue that needs to be addressed is that the education establishment, including teacher preparation programs, still believe that explicit reading instruction is not necessary for most students. I implore you to listen to the podcast from APM Reports, Hard Words, Why Aren't Kids Being Taught to Read? With only 53% of Oregon third graders proficient at ELA, it's time Oregon took a harder look at how we teach all kids to read. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Next, Heidi Smith, Ben Smith, and George Hegarty. Anybody can start who wants.
Okay. Co-chairs and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Heidi Smith. I'm from Prineville and have four sons who attend or attended online and charter schools. When my oldest son was in the sixth grade, he became disrespectful while attending public brick and mortar school. That is when I decided that something had to change. So I enrolled my two oldest sons in online school 8 years ago. After my oldest son started online school in the seventh grade, he was able to pursue his passions and became surrounded by role models and experts in various fields of his interests. He competed nationally in shooting sports, won state 1 year, got second place 2 years at nationals, and raised 5 steers for 4-H. For his senior year of high school, he attended early college at COCC, which gave him the opportunity to explore different majors that he is still pursuing, welding, EMS, and fire science. He got his EMT last year and volunteers at a local fire department. He currently works his heart out fighting wildland fires for the past 2 summers to pay for his college. My next son started online school in the fourth grade. When he was in junior high, he was able to take high school computer classes and built his own computer in the seventh grade. Today, he is 16 years old and a junior in high school. He started taking early college last year. He hopes to obtain a certificate in computer information systems from COCC before he graduates from high school. He just finished his Eagle project, building a shed at the wetlands in Prineville. He volunteers in the community, works for farm labor, rides his bike sometimes 20 miles a day, competes in the annual Splash and Dash race, raised his fifth pig for 4-H, and just got back from a backcountry archery elk hunt with his older brother, dad, and mules last weekend. My third son is 13 and will testify next. My youngest son goes to Powell Butte Charter School. School choice has given our boys the opportunity to flourish, to develop their talents and interests, and to be the respectful young men that I envision them to be. Online school has been demanding, which has made them self-motivated and has prepared them to be successful in early college and in life. I can't tell you how many families I've been able to steer in this direction who are families like I was and who needed another option. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, Hi, my name is Ben Smith from Prineville, Oregon. Co-chairs and members of the committee, first I would like to say that I'm thankful for being here and all of you for taking the time to listen. You might think my mom wrote this, but you'd be wrong. I am currently enrolled in an online charter school and love getting up to do it, as well as attend my flocks of chickens and quail. I started online school in the middle of last year's school year. The difference was noticeable for me right away. I did not have to listen to the teachers talk about something besides school and their own opinions, or have to explain a task to 8 different people in the class. At my old school, I was assigned to a group of people intentionally to help them understand math. This has its pros and cons. A pro is almost everyone succeeds, but the person explaining everything has to wait for everyone else. So in turn, I was held back to the pace of my group. I was also put in a low-level reading group, and that frustrated me because I had scored high on my reading tests. A few activities that I do is music solos at least 3 times a year, playing the clarinet. My biggest performance was in the Prineville Follies in front of 1,000 people over the course of 2 days. I also raise a 4-H steer in 4-H every year. Last year, I did a band class at the local junior high, along with online school. It was a good experience, but my band teacher was constantly forcing his disrespectful and political opinions down our throats. He even went as far to call the president Orange Hitler, which is highly ironic. The best thing that online school has to offer is the freedom of choice. In my online school, I can pick through many curriculums and classes, and I am currently taking a high school class. In a few years, I plan to do early college through COCC and get a degree in computer science. I hope that other kids in the future will get the same opportunities that I have been given. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is George Hegarty, and thank you for coming here tonight. And I'm here both as a parent of a Redmond Proficiency Academy junior and as a 20-plus year English teacher in first San Francisco Bay Area, then North County San Diego, and since 2006 in Redmond, Oregon. I've taught at RPA for the past 6 years, and my daughter has attended RPA since eighth grade. For Emmy, RPA's proficiency model has allowed her to soar as a student and to excel in her extracurricular activities. The school's flexible schedule has allowed her to embrace her academics, excel in her sport, and still have time to take a breath. Because of the skills and not grade or age placement at RPA, not only was she taking primarily high school level courses as an eighth grader, but also she had room in her schedule to pursue her love of computer science. And I am beyond thrilled that she was, because of the wide range of courses that are open to all students and not just limited to upperclassmen, take and pass both of the College Board's AP Computer Science tests by the end of her sophomore year. Moreover, she has, and this for me as a literature teacher and lover of the arts, incredibly important, she's taken classes in and fallen in love with theater. I feel really lucky as a teacher and as a parent to be a part of a theater program that not only excels on a national level, but also provides a welcoming and compassionate environment for anyone who wants to take part in the performing arts. At its core, RPA is a place that respects students' abilities to know themselves, and we create pathways rather than hurdles between our students and their goals. I've had eighth graders and freshmen soar in my advanced placement English lit classes, and those same students in other systems in which I've taught wouldn't have had access to the courses until, at the very earliest, their junior years in high school. And because of Measure 98 funding, we've been able to continually enhance our AP program, especially with the addition of the College Board's AP Capstone Diploma Program, and we're able to offer each of our students the opportunity to experience accelerated coursework in their areas of academic passion. As both a teacher and a parent, I've been amazed at RPA's ability to nimbly adapt to the needs of a diverse range of students and to provide an education where all students feel respected for who they are as human beings. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Okay, next I'd like to call forward Will Anderson, Hayden Burgess, and Janie Teeter. For being here, whoever wants to start.
Would you like to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
Hello, my name is William Anderson, and I'm here to highlight a dangerous trend that I see in many public schools, the stratification caused by a lack of options.
I attend RPA, the school you toured today. Before I was at RPA, I was at a traditional school in Bend, Oregon. The options for forecasting at this school are bleak. There are standard level classes and an AP counterpart. Needless to say, for a school of almost 1,500, it is disappointing. Stemming from this, students were often corralled into one cohort or another. The result? Students who opted for the AP route were pigeonholed into a schedule with an unmanageable workload, while others were left unchallenged by, but unprepared to advance. What happened in the classes only furthered this trend. The emigration of students who are more dedicated deteriorates the quality of a classroom environment in standard level classes. By having a diverse range of student ability in a class, the participation of some encourages more from others. The students in the AP classes were aware of this trend, therefore they were hesitant to resign themselves to standard level classes. And if a student in a standard level class ever wanted to move up, they faced the daunting challenge of integrating themselves into a high performing group that had been in classes for the entirety of high school. This system kept students confined to the classes they originally forecasted themselves in and prevented movability. RPA does things differently, in a way I believe should be adopted by more schools in the state. As opposed to proposing a general track to all students that they must adhere to, they allow flexibility in what students opt to take. In many cases, the only prereq is interest. Perhaps a freshman feels ready for an AP level English course, or a senior wants to try challenging classes traditionally left to the underclassmen. With RPA system, they have leeway to choose the option that suits them best. The result? Students are more involved in the learning process and are not forced into classes they feel no desire to take. Students can more freely move into a classroom with a spectrum of ability as long as they are willing to do the work. Classroom discussions and participation are at a higher level across the board, and students are more satisfied with the options they have. For student success across the state of Oregon, the simplest way to boost the quality of our education system is to abandon the overly broad decisions that schools will make. This decision is best in an individual's hands. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Hayden Burgess. I am a student. I'm a junior at Ridgeview High School, this beautiful school, and I've been in the Redmond education system and Ben Lapine education system since the day I could remember, and I was unaware of this conference, so I had no time to prepare an essay or anything. So. What I've noticed so far about my experience as a student in my 11th year, my junior year, is that there's an imbalance of funding within the high schools and the middle schools. As a student, as an 8th grade student at Obsidian Middle School, I've noticed that textbooks were falling apart. The interior has looked like it hasn't been remodeled since 1970, when the school was built, and all that. But when I went to Ridgeview, I've noticed that there's all this fancy stuff. In fact, we got new Chromebooks this year with pens to, draw stuff or whatever. And I've noticed that Chromebooks and laptops, individual laptops for students, is quite expensive, especially for the taxpayer. And I was wondering if there's any research or anything in the effectiveness of Chromebooks as a tool for students to further their education. Because what I've noticed is that most students are playing games, they're playing Tetris, they're playing puzzle games or whatever, rather than paying attention in class, when those funds could easily go to repairing textbooks which students use to further their education. So I believe, I don't know if this is a statewide Chromebook thing or if this is just for Redmond school districts, because I've been here my life, but I would like you to take in consideration of students' education when it comes to funding. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job. You don't always have to come with anything pre-written. That was great.
Good job.
Thank you. And the written one was good too, Duncan.
See?
It's the two examples that both work.
Good job.
Co-chairs Roblin and Smith Warner, members of the committee, my name is Janie Teeter. I am here on behalf of SMART, Start Making a Reader Today. I am a member of the State SMART Board, as well as a member of the Central Oregon Leadership Council. In addition, I was fortunate to be an educator in the public schools in Oregon for over 30 years. In a few short weeks, SMART will kick off in 14 sites across Deschutes County. Last year, here in Redmond, 50 local SMART volunteers read one-on-one with nearly 120 students each week throughout the year at the Redmond Early Learning Center, as well as at Terrebonne and Tumalo Community Schools. SMART gave these children over 2,000 books to keep for their own. Region-wide, 852 students were served with over 12,000 books given away. Research shows that 14 books in a home changes the literacy skills for not only that student, but that entire family. SMART volunteers provide students with positive, child-guided, and affirming experiences around books. We're not teaching reading, but rather inspiring children to love reading and to use it as a tool for learning. This investment in early reading yields long-term benefits for our local kids and our communities. In addition, this one-on-one time provides an opportunity for communication with a caring adult. It also provides an added incentive for kids to be to school at SMART Days. SMART is a great example of a nonprofit organization supporting public schools and contributing to student success, and doing so at no cost to schools. SMART supports the work of educators by fostering students' early literacy skills and providing teachers with a window of time to have fewer students in the classroom while others are being served by SMART. In addition, SMART has been recognized for its outstanding work, receiving the 2014 Library of Congress American Prize for making a significant contribution to improving literacy. SMART is not alone. We partner with many nonprofits, such as Head Start, with programs in Bend, Prineville, and Madras. Thank you so much for your support of education. I urge you to consider nonprofits in supporting our communities and our education. Thank you.
Thank you all for your testimony.
You did a great job.
Okay, I'd like to call up Troy Longsroth, thank you. Sharon Keating and Katrina Viest.
So I would say it.
I don't know how she does.
I'd say it the German way.
We'll find out soon.
Viest. Whoever would like to start can start.
Hi, my name is Troy Longstroth, and I'm a teacher here in Redmond. I've taught here for 18 years, 11 years with the Redmond School District, and now I'm in my seventh year as a Redmond Proficiency Academy Spanish teacher. I want to talk tonight about what RPA brings to the table. I have three students in the Redmond School District. Well, they were students in the Redmond School District, and they now have all attended or currently attend RPA. Both of my girls were pretty advanced, so much so that in early elementary school we had them skip a grade so that they could remain challenged. And even so, my older daughter spent a year in math class in middle school. She was already moved up a level to the highest level offered, and she and three other students spent the year in the hallway with worksheets that were a little harder than the rest of the kids, so that that was the differentiation that was provided. I do want to say that I think RSD does a great job. It's just that the system doesn't allow the flexibility to deal with all those students. So when we moved them to RPA as sixth and eighth graders, it made a big difference. There, both girls have been able to earn high school credit as middle schoolers, and then when they were in high school, they were able to earn college credit. And my daughter is currently a student in the Honors College at George Fox, my oldest daughter. In contrast to that, my son really struggles with school, and he's also an RPA student, and we have him there because we know it's a nurturing environment that really values the whole child, not just their ability to do school. in addition, as a senior advisor, I've seen many, many students transfer in to RPA credit deficient, and they've been able to earn credit that wouldn't otherwise have been possible because they simply need to show their ability to do a skill or the knowledge that's needed in order to earn credit, not necessarily spend a semester to earn a half a credit. RPA is not the end-all be-all, and charter schools aren't, but I think they provide a valuable additional option for every student, and I wish they were available for everyone in Oregon.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Katrina Wiest. I am the wellness specialist at Ben Lapine Schools. So what does a wellness specialist do? I feed kids. That's important. So I'm here on another side of it. I'm representing the Oregon Farm to School and the School Garden Network. I'm on the executive committee for the Farm to School, and I'm here to please ask for funding to continue to sustain programs that we have. I'm looking at Senator Canope because he's been a benefit of one of our school lunches. So what we do is unique. We provide an agriculture experience to students in the school district where they can actually every day have something that comes from the Oregon agricultural farms here in Central Oregon or around the state. We were unique in Bend where we had a program that we actually had the FFA students raise 32 hogs for us over a two-year period. The FAA students took those, did the animal husbandry, animal nutrition, got them to market weight. Once they were at market weight, we harvested those hogs, brought them back into our school system without heads and skin, sorry. And we actually had our culinary students butcher out the meat. That meat was then smoked, which I had to justify a smoker as an educational opportunity, but we did. And that meat then went back out into school meals as soon as we could. It was such a great program, but we ran out of funding. We can't sustain those programs. We are also the first school district in the state of Oregon to have fresh fish and shrimp in our school meals. We live in Central Oregon. Now you figure out how we got fish here in Bend. It was quite a unique experience, but again, the funding was cut and we ran out of funding. We had $91,000 last year. We used that within 6 months of our funding for our school meal program. I'm all about making sure that Oregon farms stay in business, we sustain Oregon agricultural economy, and feeding kids good food. So again, I just came from the Bend Farmers Market because I'm also the Bend Farmers Market manager, and the harvest right now is amazing. And if we could just continue to supply that, today the students had fresh watermelons and peaches and plums and pears from all over Oregon, and that's why we want to continue this funding. So please continue to fund Oregon Farm to School and School Garden Network. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representatives and the committee, thank you again for hearing us tonight. I'm Sharon Keating, and I live here in Bend, Oregon, and with me tonight is Marge Biggers, who lives in Redmond. We're members of AAUW, American Association of University Women, which has been advocating on behalf of women and girls since 1881. We're particularly concerned with Title IX and how it impacts the safety and therefore the success of our students. At each of your stops on this listening tour, you have heard from AAUW members concerned about the safety of our students. In April of 2015, Catherine Lehman, Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights in the Department of Education, issued documents to help our AAUW branches distribute information on Title IX to the schools in their area. The DOE partnered with AAUW to make sure that school districts, superintendents, Title IX coordinators around the county receive these materials. The AAUW of Oregon spent the rest of that year delivering these materials to 175 school districts in our 36 counties. The materials included letter to superintendent, letters to the Title IX coordinators, and the Title IX resource guide, which I have a copy and will leave today. We found that many Title IX coordinators did not even know that they were the coordinators and held the positions at their schools. And we're very happy to receive the resource guides to help them figure out their responsibilities. Each school is required to have a Title IX coordinator, and an individual should be trained in how to develop and put the procedures in place for reporting and investigating complaints. Title IX, a federal law, was passed in 1972 to ensure that male and female students and employees in educational settings are treated equally, to protect against discrimination based on gender. Curbing the support is really difficult. I just want to jump ahead since I'm out of time. We do recommend that the state fund at least two employees who can manage the resources and make sure that districts have what they need to implement the program. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for your testimony. Okay, next I'd like to call up Logan Haller, Adrian Andeen, and Sherry Helt. Go ahead, anybody who wants to start can start.
You go ahead. I guess I'll start. First of all, I want to thank you very much for all of your service and for bringing this to all the districts and bringing your passion and listening. Education is the most important thing we do as a state, and I really appreciate you coming to every area of the state to look at our facilities, talk about safety, talk about how to make improvements, because we know we need to make improvements in education as a state. And I also appreciate having a
few
teachers.
Can you introduce yourself?
Oh, Sherry Helt from the Bend-La-Pine Schools Board.
Thank you.
I also want to thank the teachers on the panel, because it's nice to have people that are not only representatives, but teachers as well, and school board members. So that is very, very nice. To have on this team. As a school board member, I have learned a few things. I know that the number one thing that we can do to help children learn is have great teachers. In Bend-La-Pine schools, we have 13% less teachers in our classrooms than we did before the recession. We need to get teachers back into the classrooms. That's the first thing that I think we need to do. And secondly, with our graduation rates being low, the number one thing that I think we can do is have more options for our students. And we have an option that is working, that is tried and true with Measure 98. It just was not fully funded. And I would love to see Measure 98 fully funded, because it helps with AP kids. It helps move them forward. It helps with kids that are not on track, with ninth grade on track. And it also helps engage kids with options and prepare them for their future with jobs. And so I would urge you to look at fully funding Measure 98 in the future. It's also has an accountability measure to it already. And I think that it's improved graduation rates. And if that's our goal, I'd love to see us fully fund it as the voters had asked us to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Adrienne Andeen, and I am from the National Association of Social Workers, Oregon chapter. I've worked as a school social worker in Illinois for 6 years prior to moving to Oregon. And as a school social worker, I strive to help students, their families, and the community gain the skills and resources they needed to be successful. It all started with building trust and rapport. To the students, I was the person that they could discuss their difficult situations with and problem-solve resolutions. We used evidence-based curriculums to teach coping strategies, conflict resolution, emotional regulation, and social skills as preventative tools. I was thankful to be employed full-time at one school so I could gain and maintain connections with the students and staff. This helped the students feel more comfortable with another adult in the building whom they could go to for assistance. As a social worker in the school, I was part of a multidisciplinary team who assessed academic and social-emotional growth. I evaluated students and implemented interventions to help them improve, whether it was special or general education. To the families, I connected them to outside resources and basic needs such as applying for Medicaid, food pantries, assistance paying bills, and outside mental health agencies for continued care. In many situations, the families could not afford the continued care outside of school, and school social workers were their only access to mental health supports. To the community and district, the school social workers actively sought out how we could improve our community. We saw the low socioeconomic statuses of our community members and put together an annual food and clothing drive, which continually added more supportive resources each year. We implemented positive behavior interventions and supports and ongoing social emotional learning curriculums to create a safe climate for students to attend school in. Overall, school social workers are the connection to the home, school, and community. We strive to understand the situations of our families and work together to create positive successes for all. I believe it's important for each school in Oregon to also have a school social worker. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
So, hello, my name is Logan Holler. I am a senior at Summit High School. I met with many of you yesterday at the student meeting. So hello again. Thank you for doing this. Today I am here to speak, hopefully on behalf of all students, in regards to mental health. We are all here because we care about the success of students, not only academically, but as people. But how can we expect our students to excel academically when their mental wellness needs have been somewhat forgotten within the schools within the recent time? Within schools, mental health is a safety issue, not only for the school itself, but for the students. We need to care for our students so that they can care for themselves. Within my own school, we have developed a new position called a skill support specialist. And what he does is primarily focuses on helping students develop their stress management skills, along with other coping skills for the things that have gone in their lives, the things that have drugged them down in the world. And that has been funded through Measure 98 with an attempt to help graduation rates for the at-risk students. But that's just what we have done. In terms of what we haven't done, our elementary schools are missing counselors. In the developmental years of our students, there is no one there to tell them what's happening. In the developmental years of our students, they have no one to go to for asking what, how the world should be, how the things that shouldn't be normal. So what I was hoping for would be an increased screening within schools that connects students with outside resources or with counselors inside schools so as they can be connected not only with schools but with other peers. Bottom line, I'm simply asking to have you help us with our mental health. I'm asking you to be helpful to all of us, and in some cases I guess I'm asking you to save us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you all for your testimony. So that is everyone who had signed up to testify. I wanted to give plenty of opportunity. If there's anybody else here who would like to come forward and testify, we'd be happy to hear your testimony. Okay, I'll offer three times. Going once. Okay, anybody else? Everybody? Okay, just in case, you can, if you would like to send written testimony for the last time, by 9 o'clock tomorrow, Friday evening, you need to send it to jcss.exhibits@oregonlegislature.gov. And with that, I'd like to thank the staff and everyone who attended tonight and all of the folks who attended our multiple meetings and tours today. And say thank you very much for your involvement, and please do continue to stay involved both with your local schools and in the work that we do in the legislature going forward. With that, we are adjourned.